Truthspresso, episode 17.
Face it, we all would rather sleep in this morning. That's why God gave us espresso, to kickstart our zombified corpses into hyperdrive. And now, giving your mind and soul the morning shot of truth it craves. This is Truthspresso with Daniel Minnick.
According to a Bureau of Labor and Statistics report from 2017 entitled Highlights of Women's Earnings in 2017, on average, women working full-time make only about 81.8% of the earnings of men working full-time. So, if ever there was discrimination and injustice, well, here it is. Or is it? Hi, I'm Daniel Minnick, and welcome to Truthspresso. If you were curious and stumbled onto this episode and are listening to Truthspresso for the first time, I would welcome you to check out all that Truthspresso has to offer. We are a Christian podcast that covers topics in politics, economics, personal improvement, and we hope to cover topics in theology, apologetics, and Christian doctrine. So, this episode I have entitled Three Questions for the Gender Wage Gap. Just what is this gender wage gap, or gender pay gap, as it is referred to, and we see in quite a few news articles. I have noticed, I have read news articles about this gender wage gap or gender pay gap. What is it? Well, it is a statistical calculation. That's really all it is. It is a statistical calculation. And depending on what the statistic is, or particularly what the information is that it is communicating, it may be valid or it may not be valid. So any given statistical calculation may have its merits or demerits. So what is the gender wage gap a statistical calculation of? Precisely, it is the total amount earned by women working full-time divided by the total amount earned by men working full-time. So let's say that you start with a particular amount that aggregated shows how much women working full-time earned in the year 2018, and then you have this larger amount that is the aggregated sum of what men earned in 2018 working full time, and then you divide that total amount of what the men earned into the total amount of what the women earned, you end up with a certain percentage. And according to the report from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics from 2017, the amount women earned working full-time is almost 82% of what men earned. So why is there this difference? And does it mean anything significant? What are the questions that should arise in our minds when we are presented with this data? What does this data communicate? Well, let's dive in, shall we? So first of all, with this statistic and the definition of it, we just saw that it said men and women what they earned working full time. Now, obviously, we need to define some of our terms so that things can make a little sense. What is working full time? I mean, couldn't someone working 10 hours a week be considered full-time, or is it the particular legal issue of working over 40 hours a week that's defined as full-time? Well, according to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics report, full-time is a bucket of hours per week that starts at 35 hours a week and goes up from there. So full-time work, according to the BLS, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, is 35 hours a week or more. So that puts a little bit of perspective on how we are to understand this data. The Bureau of Labor and Statistics is not the only report, not the only source of information that demonstrates such a gender wage gap. You'll find this gender wage gap in many different sources, and the particular percentage varies from the sources. In the Pew Research Center, there's an article entitled Gender Pay Gap Facts, and from a 2018 Pew Research Center report, it says that full and part-time work totals, women earned 85% of what men earned. From the Census Bureau in 2017, it was 80% for women working full-time. So if full-time is 35 hours a week or more in the understanding of all of these sources, then we can line those up a little bit, but we see that the data varies a bit here and there. So the questions that we should ask, are these statistics true? Is there any deceit in these statistics? Are they reporting accurate information? Well, yes, they are. Yes, indeed, these statistics are true. But the question that we really need to ask is, are these statistics meaningful? And the answer to that is that it depends on your understanding of the statistics and the assumptions that you bring to the table with them. So, are we reading into the statistics too much? The statistics are the statistics. If we were to read that women are being paid 81.8% as much as men, for the same work? Is that what these statistics are trying to get us to infer? Are men and women paid differently for the exact same work? So let's say that there's a job opening, a position at a company for making widgets, and the standard pay rate for this position is $12.50 an hour. And then you hire a 25-year-old man and a 25-year-old woman at the same time. They are both single. They both graduated with the exact same college degree from the exact same college. They both started working when they were 17. Really, there's everything identical about these two candidates, except that one is a man and one is a woman. And they both get hired to work making widgets at the company, but for some reason the business pays the man $12.50 an hour, but he offers the job for the woman at, let's say, $11.75 an hour. Is that what these statistics really are communicating? Remember, this is an aggregate. These are aggregate sums covering a wide array of different factors, and we're simply dividing one sum into another. Do these statistics tell us that men and women doing the exact same work with the exact same experience, working side by side with the exact same output, are the men being paid more than the women simply because they are men? That is the question that we must answer as we examine these statistics. So we really need to disaggregate the statistics and ask ourselves some very relevant questions. And the more specific we get with our questions, and the more specific we get as we dive into the statistics, the more meaningful the information. As I mentioned before, we are going to ask three questions about the gender wage gap. Number one question that we need to ask to get some meaningful information is the question. Number one, what are the preferred college majors and jobs for men and women? To answer this question, I took the liberty to look at a Cornell University study. The title of the article is Pay Equity Panel Examines Persistent Gender Wage Gap. And this particular panel and the conclusion, the study that they did was in favor of the wage gap communicating an injustice. So I'm not really trying to research here something that debunks the wage gap. So in this panel study from Cornell University, I will include this link in the show notes. It is from an October of 2019 study. So this study was rather recent. The statistics show in this study that women, on average, working full-time, which is the 35 hours a week or more, this is the considered full-time, women, on average, working full-time earn 78% of the average of men working full-time. So there's that variance that I mentioned before. The Bureau of Labor and Statistics said 81.8%. This panel study shows 78%. That seems like a significant difference, but you know, as these statistics, these studies, these aggregates vary a little bit, the principle that is being communicated about this gap is really the same idea. That women really need to catch up with men. And so according to the article from Cornell, quote, the panel was sponsored by the Samuel Curtis Johnson Graduate School of Management's Office of Diversity and Inclusion and was moderated by representatives of two student groups, MBA candidates Priyasha Chaturvedi of the Women's Management Council and Jack Moriarty of the Johnson Allies for Women. So, unquote. So, really, it's obvious that this panel was really looking for this gap, and they really were trying to study this gap, not really to disaggregate, but to try to figure out policy. What is one of the findings in this article? Different career choices contributes to the gap. From the article, quote, one of the root causes of the wage gap is the way girls and boys are steered toward different careers in school, said Kevin Halleck, dean of the Cornell S.C. Johnson College of Business and Professor of Strategy and Business Economics, unquote. So, different career choices? Remember, say, a janitor would probably be paid, you know, a little bit less than the CEO of a company might. So, you know, not everyone, unless you were living in communist Russia during the Cold War, you're probably paid somewhat relatively compared to the skills or the experience or the college degree of choice that you majored in. Some jobs produce more output than others. Some jobs are worth more financially than others. And so really what you put in is what you get out. Let's say you're a teenager and you work and you earn the minimum wage doing a relatively low-skilled job, but the purpose of you doing that is to earn some money to pay for a college degree, and the degree is intended to get you a better job, one that uses more skills rather than simply human mechanical labor. And As you graduate from college, the expectation of that time that you put into studies and the investment where you likely got a student loan to pay for your college degree is that the payoff will be there, that you will earn more money working a better job, and that taking some of that extra money that you earn from your better job versus what you would have earned working a lower skilled job, that extra money is then used to pay off your loan, and it's an investment because you realize that some jobs pay more than others. And so different career choices can result in different jobs that pay more than others. Some of the first episodes of Truthspresso dealt with planning for college and really understanding different college majors and how the market forces of supply and demand really affects how much someone is paid with a different degree. And for an example off the top of my head, there are a lot more people involved in getting education degrees than there are getting ones in the hard sciences like applied sciences or even engineering, mechanical, electrical, aerospace and chemical engineering degrees, and those pay more because they require higher skills. They actually deal with very objective outputs that improve, that cut costs, that improve productivity and contribute to profits of companies. And the number of students willing to go into those majors is significantly lower than really what seems to be a glut of education majors. And so there is a lot of education graduates chasing a lot fewer available jobs in the realm of education to be school teachers and university teachers and so on like that. And that is why teaching positions, especially when you get to the more generalized curricula of education, when you do with early childhood, elementary education, those pay less than high school topics or college topics. And teaching subjects at colleges and universities and in high schools or elementary schools, they pay less than what an engineering major might earn, unless you're someone very tenured or someone well-known like, say, Paul Krugman, who is a famous Keynesian economist teacher. He was earning probably a lot more than the typical engineering graduate. But nevertheless, the choice of your career affects how much you get paid. Here is an article. It is entitled, "Women Dominate College Majors That Lead to Lower Paying Work," by a certain Sarah Green Carmichael. This is from HBR.org. I will include this link in the show notes. It notes that STEM subjects, with the exception of nursing, are mostly dominated by men, and soft sciences like social work and liberal arts are mostly dominated by women, and STEM subjects naturally pay more. And if mostly men are working there, then men are earning a lot more money that way. And soft sciences like social work and liberal arts that have a lot more concentration of women earn less because there's also a lot of men in there too. But those types of subjects, there's a lot more availability of people who are qualified to do that type of work, and there's a lot less demand for them compared to raw productivity and output and ingenuity that really increases economic output, shall we say, from that businesses want to hire. According to this article, "Women Dominate College Majors That Lead to Lower Paying Work," quote, "wages in biology and design were higher when the fields were predominantly male. As more women became biologists and designers, pay dropped. The opposite happened in computing, where early programmers were female. Today, that field is one of the most predominantly male and one of the highest paying, unquote. So Sarah Green Carmichael is trying to understand this gender pay gap and is really lamenting the idea that somehow wherever women go, pay drops, and wherever men go, pay increases. And she's coming to the conclusion that it's because people like to pay men more and people like to pay women less. Let's really consider if her conclusions are really misunderstanding the data here. She's claiming that decades ago, fashion design was dominated by men. It was a higher paying field, but once women entered that, pay went down because for some reason, companies just like to pay women less. They just discriminate against women. But we need to factor in the time. Supply and demand dictates because too many people, mostly women, admittedly, but too many people are now getting degrees in fashion design, and there's not enough demand to hire all these fashion designers. Basically, with fashion design, you can't just get a degree and then get a paid position doing fashion design anymore. You really need to be an entrepreneur, and it's a risk now, and you have to really, it's really a make or break thing. You either succeed in it or you don't. It's not a matter of a man or a woman having a paid position at a company doing fashion design and the women are getting paid less. The market dynamics have changed as women have gotten into fashion design, and a degree in fashion design by either a man or a woman does not in any way guarantee that you'll get a job being hired to do fashion design. Also, mentioning biology, pure biology itself has changed. The demand for merely having a degree in biology is much lower because of automation and technology increases, computers, engineering, chemical engineering in particular is what is in demand. And so if you get a degree in chemical engineering rather than just pure biology, you will most likely get a good job that is higher paying, because a lot of what biologists used to do years ago is now automated, and you need to have engineering skills to do the biology. And also, let's look at the question of computer programming. What Sarah Green Carmichael is looking at is the computer programming of quite a few decades ago. Computer programming has evolved significantly over the decades. In fact, computer programming evolves probably a lot more rapidly than any other vocation. A lot more algorithms and software, architecture, and design has entered into the computer programming realm, where computer programming used to be somewhat of a secretarial thing and feeding instructions into a machine to generate reports. Now it requires a lot of the same kind of engineering skills that would go into mechanical engineering. It's a lot more focused on complex algorithms and architecting software in terms of objects and communications, and so that's why things have changed, and it seems that men seem to go more into that kind of realm. So that accounts for the change in computer programming. It is a hot field. A lot of men have entered into that over doing other things. That's what men have flocked into, going to computer science instead of some other profession where their skills would had used to go, but computer programming is now a hotter field. According to Sarah Green Carmichael, quote, "There's also the pesky issue of market forces and the skills that society values. Music may be a highly technical field, but it's a low-paying one," unquote. So let's ask the question, why? Why is music what she considers a highly technical field, but it's low paying? Well, the question is supply and demand. There are fewer mechanical engineering majors than music majors in college. There is a higher demand for the productivity, the objective productivity of engineers, whether male or female. And music, whether male or female, there's lots of competition, and the musician really needs to break in to succeed. As I mentioned before, it's a make it or break it thing. There's really no just slow, gradual increase in pay and getting, employed full time as a musician and then getting your pay go up as you get raises in pay. You either succeed or you don't. You either build a fan base or you don't, and you have to compete with the artistic skill of many other competitors in the music realm. So productivity and cost cutting is the factor. STEM subjects are much more objective and precise. This is what is in demand for making profits in a lot more companies, and that's why music, although it is a very difficult field, it really requires a lot of brain cells to do music, yes, but you have to get a fan base or you don't succeed. So that was question number one. What are the preferred college majors and jobs? Question number two, what are the working preferences? Is a job all about raw pay, or are there other factors that determine whether someone wants job A over job B? From the HBR article mentioned above, the gap, quote, could be driven by the behavior of the job seeker. Perhaps men feel pressured to find and take the highest paying job they can get, while women think holistically about work-life balance and flexibility, unquote. Well, there you go. Although the article is pretty much lamenting the fact that there might be different pressures on men and women, it says that women think holistically about work-life balance and flexibility. So the question there is work-life balance and flexibility, does this have a value? Does this have a value that can actually be measured in, let's say, you could put somewhat of a price on it? So let's say you're offered a job that is extremely stressful and pays you $50 an hour, but requires you to work 50 hours a week and also be on call. Or there's a job that pays half that, but you get a lot more flexible time to schedule things that you'd want to do or even need to do outside of the standard work hours. Some people would take, if some people who really don't need the money that much, let's say a married woman who already has a source of income in her husband, she may want the flexibility that has a value, it has a price to it. So the pay gap does not really take into account working preferences. Compensation comes in many forms other than raw salary, as we just saw. Flexible hours sacrifices the hourly pay that you might get. More time off does sacrifice the pay that you might get. And the higher availability commands more pay. A job that expects you to be available really 24/7 as needed is likely going to pay you a lot more for your work, because there's demand for those types of jobs, and there are fewer people, relatively speaking, who are willing to work under those terms. So that was number two. Number one was, what are the preferred college majors and jobs? Number two, what are the working preferences? And number three, considering this wage gap, what are the family roles that men and women play? Do family roles influence how they view the impact of their career. So let's consider this truism. Women are more likely to get pregnant than men. You know, just think about it for a minute. Maybe it'll sink in. Women are more likely to get pregnant than men. How about men can't get pregnant? And, you know, if anyone's going to get pregnant, it's going to be a woman. So does pregnancy affect things like jobs? Does it even affect, you know, let's say a woman is thinking about getting pregnant at some point, is that going to impact how she views the or her life's career? So depending on how physically demanding the particular job is, pregnancy can require a woman to need prenatal time off as well as maternal leave off. When a man plans for a career, he usually realizes that he likely needs to work most of his life with relatively fewer breaks or shorter breaks from his career. His living and retirement depends primarily on his efforts. When a man plans to be a family man, he is likely thinking about a career that will support not only him, but a wife and children. So even in situations where both the husband and wife plan to work, the minimum planned income is going to come from the man. His career may or may not have some kind of social goal in mind. Paying the bills comes first for the man. Men are more likely even to study a topic that is known to be difficult, even if they don't actually have a passion for it, merely because of how much it pays. Why is this so? Is it because men are self-centered and greedy and all they want is money? Well, that could be entirely possible with some men, but it's also likely that men realize that whether they are living for themselves or will eventually raise a family, the primary function of their work is to provide. And let's also consider the question of what would count as income in this gender wage gap disparity. What really counts as income for a married woman? What really counts as income for a married woman with children? If the woman is married and her husband is working and he earns more than she does, yet she gets to spend some of the money he earns on things she needs or even wants, why really, you know, it's not reported in the statistics, but why shouldn't we consider that as income? I mean, it would be the same effect as if she had actually earned the money. You know, if the man earns it and spends it, otherwise, what is income for the man is not necessarily all at his disposal to spend. The married man and then the married woman, even if she's working part-time, their income is combined. And so what the man earns benefits the woman and really counts as part of the income that the woman gets to spend. So why doesn't this bridge the wage gap? And if they're both married and they have children, some of the man's income goes to expenses for children. If the woman is able to use money from her husband to buy things that she or the children need, why would we consider this injustice if this is a factor in the so-called wage gap? Isn't the money that the woman spends functionally her income? And that's the question that these statistics don't really consider. So those were three questions to ask about the gender wage gap. But stay tuned for the next episode. We are not done yet with this topic. In the next episode, we are going to disaggregate the statistics. Let's have a little fun with that, shall we? And then we are really going to ask ourselves to ponder the thought of when the government wants to force society to close the so-called gender wage gap. What would be the ramifications if the wage gap really is not what they make it out to be? You don't want to miss the next episode as we finish up about the gender wage gap.
Thank you for waking up with Truthspresso. Good morning, and God bless your day.
Hey friends, Daniel Minnick here again. If you liked waking up to this episode of Truthspresso, I would really appreciate it if you would rate it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever application you use to listen to Truthspresso.